Here we go. We are up to. We are up to part three. Yeah. Remind me your name. Baruch. Okay, Baruch's here. Ready to go. You're in the recording. It's official. So we're up to part three, and here what are we up to? What did we end off? Last week, he's being definitely hitting some opposition. He has tremendous following, people giving up all their possessions, as we mentioned in the past, selling everything to move to Eretz Yisrael to make Aliyah because Mashiach's here. And people have lost their das to just this movement of Shabtai Tzvi. And Nasan Azazi is definitely underway convincing people and promoting Shabtai Tzvi and his leadership. And again?
Was it a difficult time?
That's why.
It was a desperation?
It was right after Tach V'Tach, and they were harping on that weakness. That was the very, very intro, and that's an excellent question, and the answer is yes, exactly. There was exactly a weakness, and happens to be some claim that Chassidus was on the heels of the weakness to Klal Yisrael from Shabtai Tzvi. Because they were so battered, they got physically battered, and then they got spiritually battered by Shabtai Tzvi. And total loss of trust, because even the leader was totally off. And it's a very, very confusing thing for people when Mashiach doesn't pan out the way you were hoping. And you lost all your money over some phony. Or you still hold on to it. That's the option. When you're faced with that fork, so where are you going to go? Either you're going to continue and just, you cannot let go, and you'll think he's Mashiach till this day, which again, there are people who supposedly are followers today. We mentioned in Shir number one, anyone wants to look it up, the Donmeh, D-O-N-M-E-H, M-A-H, Donmeh. Donmeh are a group of people in Turkey. This is from this book, Mashiach HaSheker Misnagdeya, that 700-page work on the false messiahs. So they claim that in Turkey nowadays there is a following. They're totally not Jews, because forget assimilation. They deliberately married non-Jews. And when you're dealing with, you know, esoteric stuff, you can do whatever you want. And you're not bound by Torah halacha because you're on a higher plane. Exactly. But they can answer that too. That's what we're getting to tonight. Yeah, they can answer that too. But the problem is when you have answers and you don't have to answer to the book, and you have answers beyond the book, so you always have the ability to answer it up and to explain it away. That, oh, you can't fathom. I can't fathom. None of us could fathom. But if you only knew that you were Mashiach, so then anything it says in the Torah, loy, sirtzach, that's fine. Loy, sinach, that's fine. And you're being mesakein tikunim, right? And you just say huji buji, and it's all okay, right? So that's.
Is there a clearance on whether from the get-go he was trying to take the Klal Yisrael and trick them, or he thought he was Mashiach? Did he convince himself?
So I'll ask that question. It's very hard to answer. They claim that some claim that if he would be psychoanalyzed today, he definitely would be locked up. There's some who claim that. Others claim it's Nasan Azazi's doing. He really thought he was Mashiach, but people don't follow Mashiach. Nasan Azazi had something to gain from it or out of it, and he was the one promoting. He was the Navi. What? That's not clear. Yeah, he was his PR manager. He was a Navi. He actually was Talmud Chacham, but definitely not of upstanding moral and ethical beliefs, because he was taking people down and he knew it, because after he converted he was the one answering it away. He was the one explaining away. No, he had to go into Islam to be mesakein the nitzotzes and the klipas, right? So that's where it gets tricky. Okay, so where are we? He has a tremendous following. The Rabbanim, he has a group of Rabbanim who are on his back everywhere he goes. In Turkey, Cheirim, he gives them a Cheirim back. Okay? And the problem is that the Rabbanim are really also it weakened the status and the standing of Rabbanim, because the Rabbanim are shrying and screaming against them, against this movement, but the masses are behind him. And there are more public masses behind Shabtai Tzvi than behind the Rabbanim. There were thousands and thousands of people. Germany, Poland, Turkey, Israel. That's every continent that Yidden were on that believed he was Mashiach. And then there are Rabbanim who were torn, which doesn't help. And then there are a few Rabbanim who bought in because they'd never seen anything like it, which again is very hard to weigh in. So then what happens next? Many of the Rabbanim went, and in the Ottoman Empire, the Turkish Empire, the way it worked is, all you need to do is just, like any other place really, till this day, if you can convince the authorities that someone is trying to undermine their authority, so they'll feel threatened and they'll take care of it. So they went to the Sultan and they said, this person is trying to make an uprising, he feels he's the Messiah, and the Sultan went, and this is a... They already had him locked up, and he had a little getaway in Albania. They exiled him to Albania, and they had a prison, but they gave him a lot of freedom, and the prison guards, they had a fee to go visit Shabtai Tzvi, and they talk about, that's when the Taz's children went, as we mentioned last week. The Taz's children went to go see him. They traveled from Poland to Albania, not a small trip, to go see Shabtai Tzvi, and the Ottomans were making a killing. Every person who came paid a hefty fee to go visit Shabtai Tzvi. So it was very nice. Everyone gained, right? Shabtai Tzvi got his freedom, and Dasna Azazi still had a gig, and the guards are making a lot of money. So it's a win-win. What happens is they go to the Sultan, and they tell the Sultan he's really trying as hard as he can to gather Jews from across the world to make... they're all going to go up to their land to make their own empire. And it's true. You can't deny it.
That's under the Ottoman Empire.
Yeah. So that's bad, right? That's called an uprising, you know, whatever you want to call it. So the Sultan calls him in and gives him an ultimatum. That's it. You know, we caught a big fish. Either you convert or we'll kill you. And he converts. Okay, so if you stop the story here, everyone sitting in this room, if you heard the Gadol HaDor, or whoever you thought, converted to another religion, what would your reaction be? So this is where many people had diverging reactions. Many people left the faith. That's it. Mashiach converted to Islam. He became Islamic. Mashiach converted to Islam, and therefore we're out. That's it. How are you supposed to understand what that even was? What's going on? Or Nasan Azazi quickly explains that, again, I said it in a very derogatory or critical way, but if you really believe these things, so then, no, he the greatest geula comes when Yishmael will go head-to-head with Klal Yisrael. So he went into Yishmael to take them down. You could believe it? It's not so crazy. If you believe esoteric things have, yeah, and he's the Gadol HaDor, so that's what he had to do. It was Eis Lasses Lashem, but he's really still the Mashiach, and he's continuing from there. So the storyline continues. Many people just drop, and they realize the Rabbanim were really right all along. The Rabbanim, his opposing Rabbanim. You have Yaakov Sesportes and many, many others. Shabta Chacham Tzvi, that's already one generation later. Yaakov Emden, and many, many others. The problem is that by now, there are Svarim written, there are Talmidim, there are followers who are promoting the messages and there's many, 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 many... nuances in Kabbalistic writings that reference him. What was the wording? They had a certain wording how they referred to him. I forgot the sefer. Meaning, nowadays you call a rabbi by an admor, right? Or Rav David Abuchatzera, he's an admor, right? Adoneinu, Moreinu, V'Rabeinu. they had a certain acronym for him, and they used to hide it. They used to hide it in certain Sfarim, and it was a reference to Shabtai Tzvi. You had to be acquainted with their references to pick up that these Sfarim were tainted or were injected with references to Shabtai Tzvi. That's where it got tricky. You really have to be on the ball. That's why Rabbi Emden writes in his book that we brought last week, Sefer HaKanoos, he was trying to keep his finger on the pulse. Every little step they took, he wanted to stay in touch because he needed to track it. Because they were very, very sly. Nechemiah Chiyun was a preacher who went town to town, and a trained ear could hear that he was promoting Shabtai Tzvi. Which is really, this is going to be probably next week, is going to be how far-reaching and how much of a negative effect did it actually have afterward. So he goes and he converts, and eventually he dies in captivity. So now the story should definitely end.
Now, is there anyone who believes that he could have been the Mashiach and that was his Nisayon he failed?
The problem is, if Yaakov Sportes, okay, Blina, I have to bring the Sefer. I thought I brought it, and I looked back in my bag, and it's not here. Yaakov Sportes went for many, many tainas against him from the get-go. Why? Mashiach doesn't claim he is the Mashiach, or he's not convinced that he is a Mashiach. He is told that he is a Mashiach. He's not telling others that he's Mashiach. There has to be some milchama of Goyg u'Magoyg that he is heading, or, you know, somewhat involved in, which he wasn't. He has to be from Tzetzoi Davan HaMelech, which he wasn't. He didn't have many things going for him. So, as we mentioned in the past, we'll fill you in, Bar Kochva definitely had that going for him, and it didn't work out. Shabtai Tzvi, I don't believe anyone thinks that he was rightfully Mashiach. They reneged. After he converted, it was over. Yeah, none of the Rabbanim stuck with him to the end. I don't know the answer. Those Rabbanim who were on board, who then reneged, what was their take post facto? I don't know the answer. Okay, so now, what is the result? Yeah? What is the result? I guess we'll just wrap it up with this. What is the result if you had to go through such a thing? And you're the Rabbanim at the time. What precautionary measures would you take to ensure this never happens again? Because, just to give you an inkling of how bad this was, the followers of Shabtai Tzvi, if they heard that there were people opposed, they would go and lynch them. Physically assault, murder, there was no... You're denying Mashiach. It's one of the tenets of our beliefs. You're a kofer. What? You're a kofer. There's the Mashiach. We all believe in Mashiach. He's living in a jail in Albania, and you're denying it? We'll kill you. So it was a very, very, very scary thing. So, and when you become a kamikaze, right, you can believe in anything. And you go all the way. You can do anything. When you believe in this higher cause that transcends any limitations, so the sky's the limit. So what would you do? So another negative thing, there was no more yichus. There was a lot of promiscuous business and a lot of immorality that they promoted, not that happened. They promoted it. Jacob Frank, the Frankists. They were the worst, the worst. You should just... All I'll tell you, Mar Makam Hulachem, if you want to read what he writes about the Frankists in that book, Meshichei HaSheker, it's wild that people will believe it as a religion. A religion of immorality. No, because it's all tikkunim. It's the same... It's the approach that we're not bound by the Torah. We can take Tisha B'Av and turn it into a feast day. We could take Loi Signov and we could take Loi Sirtzav. We take Loi Sinov and we need to be Miyachei these Yichudim.
But I feel like also the other thing you just said, like in a way he created his own religion. Meaning like it's no different than Christianity.
But he would...
The day, But I'm saying from the follower's perspective, like, yeah, if somebody came to me and said, in legitimate cause, for whatever purpose, like, you don't have to keep Shabbos anymore, like, okay, it's definitely easier to not keep Shabbos and to not have to worry about all these restrictions. So for all those people, I'm not saying that, like, they were convinced, and then also to say, like, you know, it's easier to
but
this lifestyle.
It's much harder to convince the masses of a new religion. It's much easier, which may have been done, to start within the same religion and slowly veer off, right? It's been done before, and they were pretty successful, right? So that's definitely what happened, but he still claims he's Mashiach Hashem. Mashiach Hashem, and he would say Tehillim and do shiurim with Tishbachos and talk about Kabbalah. Where is he getting Kabbalah from? Zohar, Arizal. That's the problem. So one of the biggest reactions, which had ripple effects for generations and generations, was a very, I want to say opposition, I want to say a very, very wary, nervous approach and reaction to all Kabbalah. Because that was really the scapegoat that the Rabbanim took to safeguard themselves. Because that's where they caused and they ravaged the most. Because that's where everything became free. Everything became free when you don't have to answer to halacha, you don't have to answer to the Torah, you're beyond. So that's where all this began. What?
So
you're
saying that's what
the same thing that was the same. No. They didn't know. That was already. Masil Sharm? No, so there's different hisnagdus that happened over the years. There was a hisnagdus to Shaptai Tzvi, there was a hisnagdus to Hasidus, there was a hisnagdus to Musar. Each one was really separate. We're going to get there. We're actually going to get there. Misnagdim were not necessarily against Kabbalah, the Kabbalah they were doing. They weren't fearful that the Kabbalah was of Shaptai Tzvi ilk. They were fearful that it's just the wrong time, the wrong place, and the wrong emphasis. But nevertheless, that's why the Ramchal, that's who you mentioned, Ramchal, we're going to get to him. Ooh, they went after him with fire. They made him sign that he's never going to have any Talmidim, he's never going to print any Svarim. They forced him, they coerced him to sign that he'll never have anything. So to all of us, so Shabtai Tzvi was born in the 1500s, mid-1500s, and... No, the late 1500s. He was born. Yeah, he was born 1625. Right? 16. Because he was around 20 by Tachvatan. He lived through it. He was in Turkey, that's why he wasn't really affected. So he was born in the early 1600s. The Ramchal was around 1700, early 1700s. It's only 100 years later. It's just not so far away. And that's really one of the reasons why that opposition began. And that's where this is to bring us. This is why we went into this. This brings us really to Yaakov Emdin, who it was one of his, you know, life missions, as was the Chacham Tzvi, to fight them, to negate all these people, to sniff them out, to find them, and to expose them. And that's why he felt there was something up with the Yonis and Eibshitz. That's why he was fire. Because he felt, Eis Lassus LaHashem, we have to uproot it at all costs. And that's where the backdrop to Emirat Hashem the coming weeks, Rabbi Yaakov Emdin and Reb Yonason Eibshitz, we can at least appreciate why it was so charged, well beyond anything we can imagine, because it was, again, so raw. It was 50 years prior, 30 years prior, and we'll continue from there.